This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Boldly Go Travels. You're about to hear the audio from one of our recent YouTube videos. For the full experience with drone footage, hotel walkthroughs, and all the visuals from our adventures, head to the Boldly Go Travels YouTube channel or just click the link directly to the video in the description. Enjoy the show. Does Hong Kong actually live up to the hype, or is it just overwhelming in person? Because that was our question going in. And as first timers, we only had 4 days to find out the answer to that question. We found a hotel with some of the most insane views I've ever seen, but in a city like this, there are tourist traps that you have to avoid if you don't know what you're doing. Hong Kong was the first stop of our 33-day honeymoon, and this was our experience. If you're new to the channel, welcome. My name is DeAndre Koch. I'm a Forbes recognized financial advisor, and along with my wife Taryn, we use points, miles, and smart travel strategies to elevate our adventures without overpaying for the experience. So if that is your vibe and you want to learn more, hit the subscribe button. So there are two things that we tell any first timer to sort out at the airport, because when you land after a long haul flight, the last thing you want is to figure this out at the curb. The fastest and cheapest way into the city is the Airport Express. It's clean, it's fast, and dead easy to navigate. And once you get into town, you can transfer straight onto the MTR or grab one of the free hotel shuttle buses that connects from the Airport Express stations, depending on where you're staying. Now for us, we landed late at night with a lot of luggage, so we took a taxi. And here's the mistake that will leave you stranded at the curb if you're not careful. Because in a city where everything is tap to pay, Hong Kong taxis are still mainly cash only. So if you don't have Hong Kong dollars before you leave the terminal, you aren't getting a ride, period. So stop at the currency exchange on your way out, even if it's late, even if you think you won't need it. And if you're staying on Hong Kong Island like we were at the Grand Hyatt, you want the red taxi line specifically. There are three colors. Red's the one you want. Second thing, I call this the baggage claim head start. While everyone else is standing at the carousel staring at nothing, download the Octopus for Tourist app and load it up through Apple Pay or Google Pay. By the time your bags hit the belt, you've already bypassed every ticket line in the city. So whether it's trains, buses, most day-to-day transit options, it's all just a single tap, and we used it constantly. Now, once we got to the Grand Hyatt, even that late night arrival was super smooth. Check-in was fast, they recognized our globalist status right away, and the whole thing just felt like a solid landing after a very long day of travel. I did a full deep dive on the Grand Hyatt in my last video, including exactly how we stayed in a $2,900 suite without paying a dollar of cash out of pocket, and we'll link to that in the description. And if you're watching this and thinking, okay, but how do I actually get to the point where I'm staying in a suite like that for free? Well, scan the QR code on screen or click the link in the description. We're talking building hotel status fast, flying business class, and staying in luxury properties for a fraction of the price. And it's all completely free to access. Our points and miles guide, our weekly podcast, a community of travelers who've totally changed the way they travel, and a weekly newsletter with the best deals sent straight to your inbox. All the links are right in the description. Now, what we found once we actually stepped outside the hotel really changed our whole perspective on the city, and here's exactly what I mean. So after a long haul flight, we're not trying to hit Hong Kong with some packed first day plan. We needed a base, a shower, and a minute to breathe. And that's where the Grand Hyatt really came in clutch. because when your hotel is sitting right on the Wan Chai waterfront with harbor views from the 33rd floor, it gives you something most first-timers don't have in a city like this. It's a reason to slow down and let the place come to you. After catching up on some sleep and grabbing breakfast in the club lounge the next morning, we went for an open-ended walk around the city and came back along the Victoria Harbor Promenade. And this is the first thing I tell any first-timer to Hong Kong. Don't overcomplicate your first few hours. Just walk. Because once you get out there, the city really starts to make sense fast. You've got the skyline across the harbor, ferries cutting through the water, people moving with serious purpose, and all that layered vertical energy Hong Kong is really known for. But it didn't feel chaotic, which is nice. It felt organized, tight, but functional. The streets were also incredibly clean, even in the busier areas, which honestly caught me pretty off guard. And most people were really just locked in. I'm talking AirPods in, eyes forward, moving like they had somewhere to be. As a first timer and clearly not a local, I never once felt like my wife and I stood out. And that really makes a huge difference when you're still finding your footing in a brand new city. Here's the thing that actually stopped me in my tracks. I know this is random, but it's the scaffolding, all of it. Even on massive high-rise buildings, it's made entirely out of bamboo. Not metal pipe like you'd see everywhere else, actual hand-tied bamboo going up the side of skyscrapers, 30, 40, 50 floors. So it turns out bamboo is incredibly strong and fire resistant, so it actually makes a lot of sense, but seeing it for the first time on a 50-story building is genuinely wild. Now, unfortunately, on this trip, Taryn really wasn't feeling well for a good chunk of our time here in Hong Kong, and this is actually where the Grand Hyatt concierge team came in clutch in a way that we did not expect or see coming. So instead of wasting half a day trying to find an urgent care clinic in an unfamiliar city, we called down to the concierge. They had a doctor at our room within less than an hour. She had a full exam, prescriptions, everything without ever having to leave the hotel, which was really nice. And that's the kind of service that actually changes the trip when things don't go as planned. So a lot of the exploring and adventuring that you're about to hear, I did on my own while she rested and recovered. Now let's talk about getting around, because this was one of the biggest surprises of the whole trip. Hong Kong's transit is not just good. It's the kind of system that makes you realize how far behind most cities actually are. The first thing you need to set up is the Octopus for Tourists app. And I mean, set it up before you even leave the airport. Like, as I mentioned, while you're waiting for your bags. That way, by the time you walk out of the terminal, you're already ready for trains, buses, and most day-to-day transit in the city. If you have an iPhone, you load money directly onto the app through Apple Pay. And I'm assuming Android users, you can do the same thing through Google Pay. I loaded about $100 US right at the start because I honestly had no idea how much we would spend over our 4 days. But by the end, I'd only spent around $40. So I'd say for most visitors, $50 to $60 US is probably more than enough. And you can always easily refund any unused money back to the original card used for payment through that app as well. And here's a pro tip. Set your Octopus card as your Express Transit card in Apple Wallet. That way your phone doesn't even need to be unlocked to tap to go through the gates. No fumbling, no pulling up the app, you just tap and you go. Now, once you're in the system, the MTR is genuinely smooth. I'm talking clean, fast, reliable, runs like clockwork. Even the buses felt the same way. If you've been to Singapore or Japan, this probably won't surprise you. But if you haven't, it's one of those things that just resets your expectations for what public transit can actually be. And I gotta say, Google Maps is the real MVP here. Every single route we needed, it had it. It told us which platform to use, where to transfer, what exit to take, and color-coded the line so there was never any guesswork. If Google Maps said the route worked, it worked every single time. But there was one piece of tech that really felt like a cheat code for navigating the local side of the city. That would be my Meta Ray-Bans. I call these my invisible translator. Because look, Hong Kong is very English friendly, but once you get into the local neighborhoods or you're staring at a menu or a street sign or something else that's strictly in Chinese, you can feel that first-timer wall really start to hit you. So instead of fumbling with my phone and trying to point a camera at a sign while people are walking by, I could just look at what I didn't understand and ask.
I was trying to get to the chiropractor and I came to these two elevators and one has like padding in it. There's this sign here that I can't see. It's a whole notice. It's in there as well. I was like, I don't know if I can take this elevator. Maybe it's a construction elevator. So I just had looked at this sign here and said, hey, Meta, what does this sign say?
This sign says, notice when there is a fire, do not use the lift. It also provides additional information in both English and Chinese about fire safety and lift usage during a fire emergency.
So I don't know if you're able to hear that, but basically Meta said it's all about fire safety and is giving information on not using the lift when there is a fire and how to be safe in the event of a fire. So again, I mean, super helpful. This one over times I feel like I actually needed to make sure I could go where I was going, but absolutely, absolutely helpful. I've got a newfound enjoyment for these glasses now, which just kind of a random added bonus for this video.
So having that kind of heads up information without breaking my stride really made the city feel way more accessible. It's one of those smart travel layers that actually removes the friction of being in a place where you don't speak the language. Now, a few etiquette things that are worth knowing before you get on the MTR. There are marked spots on the platform floor showing you exactly where to stand and wait for the doors. Pay attention to those. Also, there are designated seats for elderly riders and passengers with young children, same as most cities, but people here actually respect them, so just be aware, follow the flow, and you'll blend right in. Now, a lot of people will tell you that the Star Ferry is a must for views across the harbor. And look, I get it, it's iconic. But because our room at the Grand Hyatt already had those insane harbor views from 33 floors up, we honestly didn't feel like we needed to go out of our way for it. Most of the time, we just hopped on the MTR to cross because it was faster and dropped us exactly where we needed to be. So if you're already staying somewhere with a killer view, I would say don't feel obligated to have to check that box. So here's the one half day I would tell someone coming to Hong Kong to just go do. After hearing our episode on autopilot, Brian signed up, and within 12 hours, he got $65 in Delta flight credits and saved over 6,000 sky miles on flights he had already booked. Autopilot helps make sure you never overpay for travel again by automatically tracking your flights and hotels and repricing them when prices drop, without you constantly checking airline apps or hotel websites yourself. It keeps your same seats, your same cabin, your same itinerary, and now even tracks hotel rates too. You don't have to do anything but sign up and let it work in the background. And the best part is, you only pay when they've actually saved you money. If you want to try it out, head to boldlygo.world/autopilot or click the link in the description. And if you use promo code BOLDLYGO, you'll get your first month of the pro version completely free. Autopilot, never overpay for travel again. No tour, no guide, no complicated planning. Just grab your Octopus card and your Google Maps and head out to Nong Ping to ride the cable car up to see the Big Buddha. Now, you're probably thinking this sounds like just a typical tourist trap, and sure, it's on everyone's list, but here's the thing, this trip and excursion actually is worth it. The cable car alone is worth the trip. I'm talking a gondola that takes you from sea level through dense city, out over open water, up into green hills, and eventually across this wide open ridge with the kind of views that make you forget you were standing in one of the world's most vertical cities 45 minutes ago. It's consistently ranked as one of the top cable car experiences in the world, and once you're on it, you start to understand why. Make sure you book your tickets in advance online. You can easily do it through their website, and it'll save you from having a potentially long line when you get there. I paid around $35 round trip for the regular cabin, and it was absolutely worth it. I'll link the tickets in the description as well to make it easier if you want to buy those tickets online. Now, once you get to the top, you walk through Nong Ping Village, which has shops, food, and a vibe that feels like a very elevated version of a traditional mountain town. From there, you climb up the steps to the Buddha itself, and it is genuinely massive. I'm talking three full stories of bronze sitting on top of a mountaintop. There's a monastery there that you can walk through as well, and inside there's a hall that's quiet and intentional in a way that makes you slow down for a minute, even if you're not super religious. The whole experience is self-paced, which I love. No one's hurting you. You just go, explore, take the cable car back whenever you're ready, and you're back in the city in time for whatever you have planned for later that afternoon or evening. And here's the practical piece. You don't actually need a tour for this. Everything about the route is easy to figure out on your own using the MTR and Google Maps. I did it completely solo while Taryn was still recovering at the hotel. And from door to door, it was a really clean half-day excursion. Total cost, including the MTR and the cable car round trip, was about $40 to $45 US all in, so it was super easy. So if you want one of those outings that gives your 4 days in Hong Kong some real range, and just to go out and do it on your own, that's definitely one of them. Now, of course, we have to talk about Victoria's Peak, because if you're doing Hong Kong for the first time, this is probably already on your list, as it definitely was already on mine. You've certainly seen the skyline photos, you hear about the famous tram, and it feels like one of those classic things that you're just supposed to do. So here's what you're probably thinking right now. Is it actually worth it, or is it one of those things that looks better in photos than it feels in person? And that was also my question going in, and the honest answer is, I think it depends entirely on how you do it. See, my plan was simple. Head over there, take the peak tram, get the full experience. But here's the thing, I got there later in the day than I planned, and that is exactly the mistake that you're gonna want to avoid. By the time I reached the tram area, the line was insane. I'm talking the kind of line where you look at it for 5 seconds and immediately know you're not doing this today. For a 4 day trip, standing in a 2+ hour line to ride a tram up a hill is just not the move to make. So instead of forcing it, I did what the locals do. I took up the bus. So Google Maps pointed me to a city bus that goes straight to the top. And I know that sounds simple, and it actually is, but just know this going in, that the buses that run up to the peak are smaller than the regular city buses. So I'm talking less seats, less space. I actually had to wait for a couple buses to pass before I could even get on one. So if you're going to go during a busy window, or if you're in a group bigger than just a couple people, make sure to factor that in. And if you get motion sickness pretty easily, the road up is pretty steep with a lot of tight switchbacks the whole way. You'll want to be really prepared for that. So once I got to the top, the next decision was whether to pay for the observation tower. And again, another very long line. Now, you might assume that paying more means seeing more. But here's what no one tells you before you go. The weather up there is genuinely unpredictable. When I went, it was hazy. Not foggy enough to feel dramatic, but just hazy enough to wash out the view. The paid tower can feel like a tourist trap depending on the day, so I just skipped it. Instead, I found a walking path that loops around the upper area of the peak. Some people were running on it, biking, just kind of moving along around like it was their regular afternoon. The views weren't perfectly unobstructed, but they were real. There were no crowds, no tickets to pay for, no lines to wait in, just the city spread out below between the trees. So was it actually worth going up it at all? Again, maybe. I think if you're not staying somewhere with strong city views already, I think you go and you figure out when you get there if you want to get that top of the peak view. But if you're already sitting on a high floor with the harbor facing room like we were at the Grand Hyatt, the peak is going to feel like a lot of effort for a view that you've already got. So don't over romanticize it. Go if you want to take the experience in and you just want the experience of being there. Take the bus instead of waiting for the tram unless you get there super, super early. And skip the paid tower unless the weather is genuinely clear and the lines aren't long or you have a lot of time to work with. And if the view from your room is already doing the work, then that's not a loss. That's just smart planning. Now, we have to talk about the bar and food scene because this is where Hong Kong genuinely surprised us at a completely different level. I know, you're probably thinking, okay, big city, good cocktail bars, I get it. But here's the thing, Hong Kong doesn't just have good bars, it has a concentration of world-ranked bars all sitting within walking distance of each other in the same neighborhood, and that can change the entire night. I'm talking packed sidewalks, steep streets with glowing storefronts, people spilling out of bars at every level, and this kind of electric nighttime energy that feels exciting without ever tipping into uncomfortable. We're big followers of the world's 50 best bars list, and whenever we travel, we try to hit the ones in the city that we're visiting. Hong Kong had several, and what made this trip different was that Bar Leone had just been ranked number one in the entire world. So naturally, that one was high on our list. So we started the night at the Savory Project, currently ranked number 82 on the world's best bars list. And this was a really fun first stop because it immediately set the tone for what Hong Kong's bar scene is actually doing. Their drinks lean savory, which sounds like it could go wrong fast if the concept is just trying too hard to be clever, but here at the Savory Project, it worked. The flavors felt intentional, they were balanced, and the menu genuinely made you want to try things that you wouldn't normally order. Even if a savory cocktail sounds like a hard no to you right now, trust me, it's absolutely worth the stop. From there, we walked about 6 minutes to Bar Leone, again, the number one bar in the world. And look, I'm gonna be straight with you here, because I think you'd rather hear the honest take than the hype. Bar Leone is a great bar. The food is fantastic. The service is warm and genuinely attentive, but it felt more like a beautiful upscale Italian restaurant with great cocktails than some like mind-blowing sense of occasion bar experience. We've been to the number one bar in the world in many different countries now, and this one didn't hit the same way that others did. Now, I do want to be fair. The drinks were excellent. The Caprese cocktail that Taryn had, clarified, really nice, was one of the better looking drinks that they had there and that I've seen. But I'm managing expectations, so if I'm doing that, I'd say don't build your entire night around it. And definitely don't wait 2 hours to get in. They don't take reservations, and the line can get serious if you show up well after opening. We got lucky with the short wait, which was nice. If we hadn't, I'm not sure the experience would have felt so much worth it. But then there was Gokan, and that is the one I'd tell you to plan your night around. Ranked number 22 in Asia and number 70 in the world, Gokan was by far the best bar we visited in Hong Kong, and honestly, one of the best bar experiences we've had in a long time anywhere. We showed up about 15 minutes before they opened and without a reservation, and we were able to walk right in. If you can, sit at the bar as well. It makes for a really great experience. Every drink comes with a story. The bartenders walk you through the concept, the ingredients, the intention behind it. I'm talking drinks where they shaved fresh black truffle tableside and told you when to say stop. A martini served with a spoonful of caviar, their own takes on old fashions and margaritas that felt like something completely new while still being recognizable. From start to finish, it was the kind of experience that makes you understand why people fly to a city for just one bar. After Gokan, we ended up going to dinner at Arcane, a Michelin star restaurant that gave us the fine dining piece of the trip. Overall, it was a great meal, thoughtful courses, exactly what you'd want from a Michelin star experience. That said, and my wife Taryn would agree, who's really the foodie here, Hong Kong doesn't require you to go Michelin star level to eat incredibly well. Some of the best food moments on this trip were super casual. And one thing I can't forget when it comes to food in Hong Kong, you've got to try a pineapple bun when you get there. It's a staple. You'll see it in all the bakeries, and they go fast. Just trust me, they are incredible. Now, all three bars and Arcane were in the same area on Hong Kong Island, easy to reach by bus or Uber. We Ubered most nights, which was cheap and simple, and the whole neighborhood at night is exactly where you want to be if you want to be part of the bar and nightlife crowd at all. So after 4 days, the biggest takeaways were simple. Hong Kong clicks faster than you'd expect. The transit works, the city is cleaner than you can imagine, the food scene rewards pretty much every budget, and if you set up your base right, the whole trip just flows. This city is absolutely worth your hard-earned dollars, and we hadn't even scratched the surface. Now, coming up on the channel, I'm going to take you on the full on-the-ground experience at Victoria's Peak and the Big Buddha, so you can see exactly what those days look like, not just the highlights. And after that, we're taking you along as we head over to Fiji and then to New Zealand for the rest of our 33-day long honeymoon. So if you found this helpful, hit that like button and subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Drop a comment letting me know what you're most excited to see. And remember to always travel well and live boldly. And I will catch you on the next one.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania. Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.